Okay, we're back. Is this episode 78? Because we missed a week, right? 78?
Well, yeah, 78. And apologize. I was, I couldn't answer the bell. I mean, this first time in years, I got sick, lost my voice somehow. Last show, I made a completely erroneous prediction. It wasn't a prediction. I was just pointing out that the numbers suggested this might be an ideal time for the oligarchs to pull the plug. And so when I became ill, of course, the first thought was, well, I've been hit by, some kind of, designer drug by the government or something. I mean, these paranoid thoughts, how do you keep them out of your head? But lo and behold, it was just a cold, Tim. try as I'd like to see.
I'm a little insulted. I think yeah. I warranted an assassination attempt. Apparently, right. they're just ignoring me. It's
no, it's just a cold, but I feel fine now. Okay. Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and I know the Kellys are going to have the classic, family gathering. We're going to do the same thing here on the West Coast. And here's something to really bore people. It's raining here in Santa Barbara.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we've had one rain in the last 140 days, and it's raining tonight. So I've been building an ark all day, and I think we're supposed to get like a quarter inch.
Oh, wow.
Which is just, there'll be usually there's like, with that much rain, we might have like, say, 15 drownings.
Yeah, because you all out there aren't used to rain, so a lot of people just gonna stare up at the sky and drown when it's raining on them. Right?
Yeah, let me put it this way. Santa Barbara. I mean, if it ever snowed here, you'd lose half the population. I mean, they would just be like wandering around with their shoes off, trying to figure out what it was. It's a complete bubble weather-wise, this place, So it has a protected by the very close mountains to the ocean. So we live in this little tiny area between mountains. They go up to like 4,000 feet, but they're within 3/4 of a mile from the shoreline. And so the marine layer gets trapped. And this means the temperature, rarely gets like below 60 and rarely gets above 80. It just stays on its own year after year. And people like to live there in such places because of the temperature. It's why I think, we don't have a lot of wind either. It's real kind of, it's all trapped, protected by the mountains. But you do get fires. If you get enough ash on the hillside, then you get debris flow.
Yeah, as happened, yeah.
Which was happened last January 9th, which was just incredible. I mean, you had all these, I won't name them, but, stars, homes with boulders rolling through them. So it was quite a catastrophe, and it toughened us up. Excuse me. It toughened us up. And so... we're now, prepared for the coming winter.
Well,
but we wanted to talk about vaccines and, basically what happened was I got an information sent to me, which I passed along. I think that you had seen it first through me sending it to you, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was on a interrogation, a cross-examination of Plotkin. He is the, he's regarded as the kind of godfather of the American vaccination industry. That's how they referred to him, godfather of the U.S. vaccine program. In the deposition, which was filmed, the attorney went into the nature of the experiments that Plotkin had done over the course of his career as a research scientist in vaccinations, and it turned out that he had been doing human experimentations. Basically, this guy is like Mengele. He described his experiments, and you see, this is the key point here. is that these are experimental vaccines. Now you have the vaccines that are so-called approved, right? But these are not those. These were vaccines that were basically unknown in terms of their result, at least so-called. But he said, well, you know, we gave them to mentally handicapped people, orphans, children of mothers in prisons, and also people who were in colonial situations. In other words, African countries that were in some process of ending the colonial era and were basically slaves, right? So this was millions of people, right?
This would have been like the 60s, maybe perhaps early 70s.
60s, early 70s, you know, Central Africa. Those places were late to leave colonialization. And so Plotkin and his group were able to get in and do experimentation on the humans there. And he had a classic line. I mean, the statement that is recorded is so extraordinary. I hope all people kind of consider it for a few seconds. You know, I mean, Plotkin said that he liked to experiment on children and adults who are human in form, but not in social potential.
Jeez.
That's a quote from good old Plotkin. Just say it again. He says, I like to experiment on children and adults who are human in form, but not in social potential. And this deposition was taken in January 2018, in case you're wondering if this was some kind of archaic position in good old Plotkin. But anyway, Tim, I sent it along to you, and the reason that I thought it was critical is that, to me, this is what's clear about this is not the experimentation on humans. I think most people who've been studying vaccines and, you know, from the perspective of a historical revisionist researcher, you know, knew that that there was malevolence in this program. But what was really important to me was Plotkin's cold-blooded, psychopathic non-emotion about, you know, his disclosures. What did you think about that? I mean, I know you saw it. What was your opinion about how he reacted?
Well, how casual and he was about it. But admitting context would be considered a crime. Right? I mean, he was so blasé or, I did this, I did that. And, you know, yeah, I experimented on mentally handicapped kids and these human, you know, children.
Well, and also kids of mothers in prisons, orphans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are humans in form, but not in social potential. And so, you know, I just thought, well, now we can, and if this was like, if Plotkin was just some, you know, underling to, you know, some CDC big shot, was doing, you know, tangential research or something, you know, it would indicate there's a real malevolent sickness in the whole system. But Plotkin is the head of the whole thing. I mean, he is regarded as the godfather. That's how if you go to the Wikipedia, I don't know if they have that phrase, but that is something that he is called often, the godfather of the U.S. vaccination.
Yeah, he's not a renegade mad scientist.
No, he's giving you the official the company store shop position on vaccinations. This is the position they would be taking in their discussions about vaccinations. And so, you know, because when you have, vaccines that are experimental, you're actually risking death, right? And you can see by the collection of humans that he goes after with the first level of experiments that he's wanting to be sure that he basically attacks groups that can't fight back, right?
Yeah, and at the same time, same efforts aren't being made to clean the drinking water of these peoples or improve the nutrition of them, and at the same time they're being poisoned. And then, of course, when they do die of something, it's blamed, well, that's just Africa, like that's Chinatown, right?
Yeah, there's no so anyway, I thought, okay, well, this is really important because now you can it actually was very clarifying for me. I've wondered about the particular structure to the whole vaccine kind of structure in America. And it started for me when I got a hold of Dissolving Illusions.
Yes.
And this is a series of graphs that Dr. Susan Humphreys, you guys, on her, you can, these are online. It's in her website, Dissolving Illusions, and it's under the category of graphs. And she has 51 graphs. And when I went through this a couple of years ago, I mean, she's had the website up, you know, for years. And I went through the graphs, and then actually I was so amazed at them, I started to try to get the data sets that the graphs were made from, and I, you know, sort of got some paperwork on all this. And the overall impression, in fact, the only impression, that the graphs provide is that the vaccines had no effect on any of the diseases. Now, the diseases that the graphs cover are basically, you know, all of the major vaccination diseases: measles, rubella, smallpox, polio, whooping cough. I won't, you know, go on, but there are dozens of, you know, the major diseases that the vaccines are being touted as, you know, having brought under control. But if you look at, you know, like the actual trajectories from, like, just, you know, I'm looking at right now the graph which has diphtheria, whooping cough, and measles, right? And it has their death, their fatality rates going back to 1900. And it has the point where the vaccines were introduced relative to the trajectories that, you know, the statistics give for each of these diseases. And in no case, are the trajectories changed by the introduction of the vaccine.
Yeah.
Okay, so what this means is that the plumbers had basically, you know, adjusted our living circumstances, and there were other aspects of hygiene and probably nutrition. I'm not sure all of the elements that went into in the era between, like, you know, 1880 and 1950.
Mm-hmm.
But the vaccine was not causal to the trajectory. The trajectories had all been established long ago, you know, 50 years before the vaccine had been introduced typically. And what you were looking at, if you actually had the thing represented in its overall construction as a bell curve, you were basically looking at the vaccine being introduced at the very far right end, you know, of the curve as it disappears into nothingness.
Yeah, there's a quote out of his book called Medical Nemesis by Ivan Illich.
Yeah.
And he writes, the combined death rate from scarlet fever, diphtheria, whooping cough, and measles among children up to 15 shows that nearly 90% of the total decline in mortality between 1860 and 1965 had occurred before the introduction of antibiotics and widespread immunization. In part, this recession may be attributed to improved housing and to a decrease in the virulence of microorganisms. But by far the most important factor was a higher host resistance due to better nutrition. So it's non-medical, non-medical, yeah.
Right. Okay, so anyway, you can come up with different explanations as to why the trajectories were in decline. I think his position is very sensible, and it's what I would believe. But in any case, there is none of the graph providing evidence that the vaccines basically reduce the mortality rate of any of these things. So here's my point. So what that meant to me is that there is some other purpose for vaccinations. Now, then the idea of like providing immunity to diseases. So the people who are manning the helm at the CDC and at the World Health Organization, and the oligarchs that own those organizations, they perfectly are capable of addition and creating little XY plotted graphs, just like you and I can do, Tim. So they are not.
They're not stupid.
You know, yeah, they're not stupid. And so they would know that vaccines are a joke, or not a joke, but they are not related to anything to do with mortality from these diseases. So the question is, okay, so it's obvious that there's malevolence here. And I mean, it's just self-evident what it is. The vaccinations give the oligarchs a method by which they can get under our skin. Literally, not psychologically. They're able to inject us with stuff. And now they have the population, you know, used to them. There's no doubt in my mind that they're working on technology to basically create a brave new world where the IQs and sexuality and all of the sort of behavioral human aspects will be controlled. And they will, just like in Huxley's book, they'll create deltas, you know, and betas, and there'll be a controlling class. So I think this is really what vaccinations are. And you see, the point I was trying, like the listening to Plotkin and kind of looking through these graphs, what I think we're actually looking at is another, in fact, I'm sure of it, is another sort of intellectual construction of a basically false history and a false reality that we are, you know, kept in place by. Okay, so you look at 9/11 and you look at, you know, how the media presented it. You look at how the universities are not following up on anything. And yet it's in play as far as a rationale for the wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Holocaust and you go, where are the bodies? You know, where are the gas chamber vents? You know, where are, you know, why are there shrunken heads that are from the, you know, South America being given to the reporters, showing them that they're German atrocities? Why is Ewan Cameron in charge of, you know, of like the assessment of the German rationale for, you know, their warlike behavior? I mean, the whole thing just doesn't starts to fall apart. But my point is that vaccinations are, and the benefit of vaccinations is just another one of the sort of intellectual constructions that enslave us. And I think vaccinations, and particularly now that Plotkin has been exposed, I mean, you know, you can see that the idea that someone like that would be out there giving vaccinations to millions of African when, and with the idea of what are the rationale, like, I'm here trying to help people. If you go, you know, like, remember we talked about Wikipedia a couple of weeks ago, we're saying, gee, Wikipedia is great because it saves us the trouble of coming up with the way that personalities and histories are presented in terms of propaganda. I mean, Wikipedia's just done it for us, right? Mm-hmm. So their version is just straightforward propaganda. Well, go to Plotkin and read about what a warm-hearted individual he is.
Yeah, I was reading some.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is just Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And then listen to the video, which I really want to thank Laura. I don't want to give her last name, but for, you know, presenting to me, because it's just so important. Listen to him, the tone in his voice when he goes, I really like to experiment on children and adults who are human in form but not in social potential. And then juxtapose that to the Wikipedia, right? And you can see that there's something is really wrong, because this guy is 100% of Mengele, and Mengele, he's like Mengele plus. I mean, mm-hmm. I imagine Mengele coming up with this kind of cold-blooded, who knows, but certainly this would be on that level.
So, yeah, well, that's the tale, right? At least. Yeah, yeah, narrative. Yeah.
But anyway, so my point is that I think what we're actually seeing here is something we really need to respond to. I don't know how we're going to organize ourselves to do it, but I'm just waving the red flag.
How about the him being brought up at trial in The Hague in the World Court? And
yeah.
Him being prosecuted.
Yeah, and how about the quack psychoanalyst theoretician Joseph Atwell doing a research project on the environmental and ethnic construction of Stanley Plotkin's neurosis,
mm-hmm.
how he got to be so cold-blooded. I could write a whole, you know, thing. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, but you see, I think that it's clear, I hope it's clear, that when people listen to this cold-blooded description of like, people who are human in form but not in social potential, that you know that he's lying. See, this is the thing, Tim, is that we have to expose people like Plotkin as liars. This is not experimentation with the idea of I'm here to help people.
No, no.
This is not what this guy is about. This is experimentation for other purposes. And see, when you look at the relationship between autism and vaccines, and it isn't one-to-one, and I don't think it's the only thing that's involved with it. But what I think we're seeing is you have the oligarchs have developed a kind of an intellectual construction that enslaves us, that we think that, you know, getting the jab, which is as they describe it in Australia and New Zealand, you know, where it's just like, you know, you don't want to get the flu, so you get the jab.
Yeah.
You know, they act, you know, that this is just a normal part of our reality.
Yeah, I used to think that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was raised in it, so you know.
And you see this. So this is so really when you see Plotkin, you know, with the psychopathic cold-bloodedness, what you're really seeing is a revelation of how we're controlled, right? Because, you know, the idea that that guy would be in charge of the U.S. vaccine programs and we continue to look at vaccinations as having a basis in their trying to help us.
Yeah, as if they're benevolent when you have these admissions that they're openly malevolent, at least from the standpoint of the unlucky test subjects who just aren't socially valuable in his estimations. But there is there's a history of this. Even with the much celebrated Jonas Salk had the same attitude, and he wrote about it in his book, Survival of the Wisest, where he talks about reducing population through injection, using it to depopulate. And this is the guy who, the father of mass immunization, he supposedly invented the polio vaccine. We can talk about the false narrative of polio and also even smallpox. Maurice Hilleman, I think, was another character who admitted to, you know, the polio, knowing that the polio vaccine had the SV40 virus in it, this cancer-causing virus, supposedly. A lot of other things that perhaps cause problems years later. This guy Plotkin isn't an aberration. He's just one on a long line of ghouls who claim to be scientists, or at least they use science as a cover to carry out their, you know, their evil plots, or at least to carry out the orders they've been given. But I mean, if you talk about the fraud, I mean, we're talking about the fraud of the whole vaccine regime or paradigm, and that's what's so difficult for people to understand, is because something is so pervasive or so universal, can be such a fraud, it brings into question the entire, you know, reality that we function in. The matrix that we're functioning, it exposes the matrix for what it is. So for that's a large reason why people reject, at least aren't willing to say reject it. But yeah, one of the good example is we're kind of like where our critical faculties are suspended, is that one thing is we know at one time, under the logic of the vaccine regime, vaccines were given, they were spaced, and there were only few because the very problem that they do present to the immune system. But now the schedule has been ramped up so much, now they're what, like, I don't know, what are they, how many, 16, many 49 injections by the time you're 6 or 7 years old?
In California, it's 66 injections before you're like in third or fourth grade. 66.
Yeah, nice number.
Yeah.
But, and they, you know, there it's the law, the SB, what was it, Senate Bill 277 or something, they passed the law. But the fact that they give Hep B shots to newborns and even premature babies. And the hepatitis B is a disease you contract through intravenous drug use or sexual activity, particularly homosexual activity. How many newborns and premature babies are doing that? It's ridiculous. And it's on its face, it's absurd. They're not a risk group for hepatitis B, but they're doing it anyway. To me, that exposes the other at least at the very least, it exposes the competence of the physicians administering that to the two babies. But to me, it draws into question the whole regime, because it shows the malevolence. Just like when we talked about a while back about AIDS and the AIDS paradigm. How it was so obvious that it was a syndrome brought about through multiple things, the lifestyle and these things that were just, but they attributed this one little virus that they were able to isolate, and still that's still the narrative. Although if you look at, you know, it's, that's not the way it's played out. So that, I mean, that's what it is. You're dealing with this utter fraud. You have, I mean, obviously let's talk about, we could talk about the, did smallpox vaccination end smallpox? Well, it did not. In fact, when they tried to inject people with this, it actually caused outbreaks. Same thing with polio, the polio vaccine. And nor was it ever really determined what was the cause of paralysis. Was it poliomyelitis, or were there other factors involved in, like toxicity and the overuse of antibiotics, which causes which destroys your gut, which allows the polio that ordinarily would be asymptomatic to cause neurological damage, hence the paralysis and these things. And the fact that when they instituted the polio vaccine, they narrowed the diagnostic parameters of polio. So they didn't get rid of it, they redefined it. It used to be, I think when it started going into the vaccine in 1953 or 54, you were said to have polio if you had suffered paralysis in two separate limbs within 24 hours, and they changed it to 60 days. Lo and behold, the rate of polio went down. And the fact that the vast majority of people who had polio were asymptomatic, those who were symptomatic usually experienced flu symptoms, and only a small percentage of people suffered paralysis, and most of them recovered. And if they listened to the advice of Sister Kenny, instead of isolating the affected limb, usually if they stimulated the limb, people recovered. It was the standard practice or care which caused paralysis. And you had a few cases of iron lung. And like anything, what happened was they put the iron lung, it was bad optics or it was scary optics that had its effect. But it completely misrepresented the situation. And of course, they unleashed a polio vaccine on Franklin Delano Roosevelt's birthday in the 1950s, which is, you know, theatrics. It turns out that he probably didn't even have polio. He probably had Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is caused by exposure to toxins. He used to swim downriver from a tannery, from what I understand. And that's the summer he caught polio in the 20s. So that's an interesting story. So it's a complete and utter fraud. And by reading Dissolving Illusions, she actually goes into detail about the fraud of Edward Jenner and the smallpox. You ever read about how smallpox vaccine? Because whenever you talk, you question the vaccine regime, people pull out, what about smallpox? What about polio? Then you deconstruct that narrative. People aren't willing to accept that. It's like trying to deconstruct aspects of the Second World War. They have an emotional response to it. But you ever read, I mean, this is like how they first did it, like in the 18th century, the 19th century. They would get pus off an infected wound from a cow. That's why, you know, that's why vaccine comes from that. And they'd spread it on a woman's arm, cut it, they'd like make hash marks and smear it on the wound, and the wound became infected. They'd take that and inject it into a baby. And lo and behold, people got babies got sick and there were smallpox outbreaks. It's so crude. Yeah. And this is the basis for, you know, what we're doing today. It just maybe slightly refined, but it's still the basis, you know.
Yeah, I think if you look at Jenner, you know, the guy who was doing the first vaccinations, I mean, he's a big Freemason, so that's kind of, you know, a red flag.
He's paid like 20,000 pounds.
Yeah, and he is a member of the Royal Society, you know, mm-hmm. which is a Masonic organization. And, of course, you know, he becomes the physician to the king, which shows, you know, the oligarch connection. And then, you know, the media plays up the idea that this is actually working and there's something beneficial here. So the whole thing looks fake from the very beginning.
Well, I mean, consider reality. And this is how they change reality. In living memory, I remember not worrying about being vaccinated for. I got measles. I got chicken pox. Okay, and these were childhood. These were rites of passage. These were rites of passage diseases that children went through, and they were between the ages of 1 and 8 or 9. And it was kind of good for you to get them because it established your immune system. It gives you cellular immunity later on in life, so you don't get sick when you're older in these things. But then a measles outbreak becomes like a crisis when you can watch like old TV shows like the Brady Bunch where they make jokes of having the mumps and the measles. So
yeah, that's right, and within our own memory, yeah. And yet the narrative that is now being twisted and pushed out into the public is that, you know, if you don't have herd immunity,
yes,
against things like measles, you're going to have, you know, thousands of people dropping dead like zombies.
I just know I have pictures of me when I was a kid. And my brothers, when they have measles, and there's pictures of, you know, with the signs of measles.
Yeah, swollen up cheeks. I had measles. I had mumps.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I grew up in like, believe me, I grew up in like the 50s in Japan. We didn't have any vaccinations. We had measles. we just got them.
You got them.
The whole school got them at one time, and then but no one died or got, it was just like a bad flu.
And we got that over with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, there was no big deal. But they are creating this hysteria to support the, you know, kind of the plausibility. And it's obvious to me why they're doing it. You see, if you look at the graphs and you see, look, you know, they know this, they obviously know this. They're not doing this for money. This is just the injection system. They wanted the kind of principle of the population accepting injections because they're developing the technology of the Delta class, the Beta, and this will be one of the ways they can basically implement it, right?
Yeah, not in California, where you cannot resist. Anything the government deems, you have to take. Yeah.
And you know what's fascinating is how Orwellian, to use an expression, Australia is about the vaccinations. They actually, they're probably where we're headed, and they are basically accepting kind of legal capacity to hold jobs if you don't have a current vaccination, if you're not vaccinated, current schedule.
Yeah, they started with nurses, yeah.
Yeah, and this is not just, yeah, here we have nurses and things, and maybe public school teachers. But in Australia, I mean, just all of the employment opportunities are that have anything to do with, you know, I think that they can regulate. You have to have vaccinations.
But don't they contradict themselves? Because if you take the individual, if he's vaccinated under their explanation or narrative, then it's individual risk, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean.
Well, the whole thing is preposterous, yeah. But it's just, see, what I'm saying is that all of this is just kind of smoke and mirrors. I mean,
yeah,
they know none of this stuff has any medical purpose whatsoever. What they want is the population to have a tradition of seeing the jab as appropriate and beneficial and coming from, you know, benevolent and not malevolent, you know, purposes.
Kind of lining up, you know, like those old World War II things where the soldiers were lining up after they've been conscripted and they're just with their shirts off. They're all being shot one after one after one after one, you know.
Oh, God. It's
like
just
that. Yeah. That's what people, you know, look at it as. And that's what at least they want people to accept it as. But there's no questions are asked. You know, I was listening to an interview with, what's his name? The medical reporter, John Rappaport.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, talk about how you go to a doctor, there's the label, and it's not, you know, that you're not given any time to read the label or consider it, or even to look up the words that are in the label or to talk to a doctor or talk to a lawyer and these things. No, it's all done within a few minutes. No one questions the doctor, and the doctor doesn't even know what's in the label, you know, so there's no real critical thought process. You just accept it. And actually, what's in the labels? In fact, our candy is probably more accurately labeled than the vaccines. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, the vaccines have aluminum. They have mercury. That they have other adjuvants to like stimulate a response. And you know, even by their own, you know, admission, like 2.5% of the people that are given vaccinations have very negative reaction to them. So there's clearly some problems already, and yet we're just slowly getting used to this. You see how if they introduced it at one time, you know, but I also think they're basically trying to develop the technology they want. I think really what the reason why, you know, the population is even still existing at this point to some extent is because they haven't quite got the technology right, and so they're still experimenting. And this is what I think Plotkin is doing. If you like try to figure out, well, why would they be doing experiments if they know that the vaccines are useless? Millions of people in colonial Africa were being given experimental vaccines. What is the point? My strong suspicion is that they were trying to get data basically on autism and a lot of other kind of delta human aspects, right? They were trying to see, because all vaccinations, as I understand it, cause brain swelling.
Yeah, because they're all,
everyone. Yeah. Now we all, so the point is that, so they're swelling the brain. Incidentally, this, even you get the flu vaccine, Tim, you have slight brain swelling. Mm-hmm. It's not a great thing to have happen. But so why are they doing it if there's no medical reason and the money is not even interesting to these guys? They own the Federal Reserve System. It's because they're studying us, you see. This is really what, when you talk about Plotkin being Mengele, the analogy is very parallel. This is human experimentation for completely malevolent purposes.
Well, look at the rate of autism since the 1990s. It's exploded. Yeah. It's gone from 1 in 5, like 1 in 5,000 to 1... Nationally, 1 in 100, but some areas it's like 1 in 45 or something, or 1 in 50. Yeah. This the explosion in the autism rate follows directly along with the ramping up of the vaccine scares. I think the latest 1980s, children only got 3 vaccines. And so was there some health crisis between 1985 and the early? No, I don't remember any outbreak. What is this? Children, they've definitely ramped it up. And again, am I going out on a limb to ask the doctor, is aluminum healthy to have injected into you? Is it healthy to have mercury injected into you? Is it healthy?
Is there any possible downside to giving a 1 hour old infant brain swelling?
Yeah, and you know, that's another thing is breastfeeding is the immunity that the baby gets from breastfeeding, passive immunity, is that's non-swelling immunity, which is very important when the baby's developing. Yes. And another thing is that, from what I understand it, is that the immune system itself doesn't develop for at least for a decade, fully developed. So really giving young children vaccines is really problematic. But there is a one thing is, the theory of vaccines is you inject sort of an attenuated foreign a virus into the body, and that sparks the immune system, and then the body develops antibodies and has a memory. It can fight off that disease, you know, when they experiences it later on, when the person experiences it later on, because it has those antibodies. That's the theory, of course. But you have to spark an immunological response, which is the swelling you're talking about. But if you don't have an immune system, you're not going to have a response. So what's going to happen? A good example is with measles. If you suppress, often what they say by defeating measles, is this is the point that John Rappaport made, is when you when you get rid of measles, you're not really getting rid of measles. You're getting rid of the response, which is the rash. The rash is your body's immunological response to the foreign invader, the disease, the virus. Well, then, if you don't have the immunological response, it doesn't get rid of the virus. It just manifests itself in another way. And he says it, but what it way manifests itself is not so much a rash, which is sort of done. You know, it occurs quickly. Then it's over with. It manifests itself in chronic, long term illness, which isn't associated with measles, but associated with other problems like diabetes or allergies or just this. Organ failure later on. You see the problem there?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so, yeah, again, and then another thing is when you don't, there's a big difference between experiencing a disease through your mediating systems, your ear, nose, and throat, and your body gets exposed to it that way, as opposed to being plunged directly into a muscle, into your bloodstream.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, my question is how can we organize ourselves in terms of research and information distribution to oppose this force? How
about, I'm feeling fine. Why are you sticking a needle in me?
It's something that simple. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, they control the media. And so when people, you know, question this or try, you know, and they all say, imagine a doctor, right? Just out of medical school, they're giving him a $500 bonus for every kid he gets, yeah. The vaccine to.
So former cheerleader selling vaccines.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a drug pusher. But, you know, the thing is that this guy or girl would not have any capacity whatsoever to basically go through the data and see that this is all ridiculous, that there's no medical purpose at all. And I just can't imagine someone like that has come through that system being able to like go, well, maybe malevolent. I mean, this is how he's been trained in this for years and years, you know, that there's something beneficial here. And so what we need is a way to create research papers and research information distribution on a mass scale. I mean, this is something that the internet should be good for, right? Is that they're already, you know, there's a tremendous anti-vax kind of groundswell that's developing. What I'm wondering is if we could add to that mix more hard research and also just more media savvy about how to insert, you know, the opposition to the narrative that the oligarchs are trying to force feed us, so that, you know, we can stop this process. Because, I mean, one, we need to stop it because we don't really want to become all autistic. And then two, this should be a way, if you look at Plotkin and you look at the graphs and just, you know, the data, all the stuff that's available, to kind of start opening the minds of people to the other areas of mental domination with fake historical and scientific structures.
Yeah, and you know, bringing up perhaps the our diet, the way our food is produced, mass produced, and perhaps our health problems are related to the frequent consumption of soft drinks that are either with corn syrup or sugar, or junk food, prepackaged foods, and these things. These lead to overall poor health, which leads to illness, which then they prescribe injections and drugs as opposed to better nutrition and more nutritious food, and maybe the corporate structure that we've developed over the years. Large centralized food distribution networks, large, transportation routes, importing food from around the world and these things, then they have to have preservatives put on them, or they have to be harvested prematurely because they rot, you know, so then by the time they get to the market, they don't have the nutrients in these things and they're sprayed with chemicals. The use of pesticides, you know, glyphosate, yeah. Right?
I mean, but see, you can see how they're doing it is that they have lots of little damaging functions that we have just been mind controlled into believing are all beneficial, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of them. There's not one, I think, that, you know, is so potent and so destructive that it stands out. We're not given things like that. we're slowly being taken down and down and down. You know, it's like you could plot the decline of our intelligence in the same arc as the decline in our sperm count. I mean, it's we're just slowly getting sicker, stupider, and weaker. And all of these things are in, so many of these things are actually part of the process. You know, it's the insecticides, it's the pesticides, it's the vaccinations, it's the plastic in the foods. It's the pornography. I mean, there's just all of these elements are being injected into us one way or another. And so, you know, always try, in my opinion, always try to look at these things, not just to analyze them, to come to a, you know, an individual conclusion about them, but try to find if there's a way that we can use the more obvious malevolent actions to wake up the public. And that's why, you know, when you go through Humphreys's graphs, you wonder if this isn't something that might be valuable to, on a large scale, particularly if we can couple it. I mean, maybe there's a couple people listening to the show who are doing, you know, biological research, people getting their doctorates. I mean, I get occasionally emails from people like this. And I always say the same thing. I say, look, I know it would be kind of a career limiting, you know, behavior to do it right now. But see if you can find a way, or if there's colleagues inside your department, to try to do science that would expose this, right? I mean, if Andrew Wakefield brought out that paper where, you know, he just questioned whether or not there was, he didn't really go into, he just said there was that autism and bad biome, bad gut, mm-hmm. yeah. was related. And then, of course, so the reaction showed you how important it was to maintain the narrative of, you know, that these things are, you know, beneficial, because he was attacked, hysterically.
Yeah, the judge that ordered the rescission of his license was a public advocate of forced immigration.
So the hysteria showed you what, you know, that they really want to maintain the pathway of injection into the population.
Well,
they
something as simple, he was treating kids who were banging their head against the wall, and all the doctors were saying, well, he's just neurologically... he's neurologically sick. There's something, his wiring is wrong. He's just the way he is. And what he found out was that these kids are experiencing horrible pain, and the neurological, they weren't able to express it. And of course, the compromising of the gut led the neurological damage, inflammation of the brain, and the autism.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's something to do with the measles vaccination?
Yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah. And
what was it, the CDC? Was it Bill Thompson, his revelations?
Thompson's revelations were that, that they faked the data, mm-hmm. And that there was a particular class of people, there were African-American kids that were, having far higher than statistically.
Yeah, I think it was boys, yeah.
It was boys, and they were getting autism a lot more often, and they just got rid of that data set. And this was obviously methodologically unsound, but they did it because they just wanted to get the right result so that they could continue the narrative that these were, you know, the vaccines are beneficial and that there's no downside. But then, as Thompson pointed out, the two other people both became high-paid executives in the vaccine industry.
Well, Gerberding, who went to, was it GlaxoSmithKline or something?
Yeah. So you can see the malevolence. Yeah. So we're up against, you know, a fake and malevolent medical industry. The medical industry is compromised. I mean, it to me, it's like the CIA. You know, it's like, you know, that an organization after MKUltra that should have been put out of existence.
Well, I think that's what people have to understand is the history of what we call the medical industry, the allopathic medicine. It's Rockefeller medicine. It goes back to the early 20th century. And so this cartelization of medicine under that certain model. And so other types of medicine like allopathic, homeopathic, these things were marginalized and deprived of investment and research. So they weren't allowed to develop. And at the same time, they create this narrative of the heroic medicine, intervention, drugs, you know, these things in surgery, and as opposed to letting the body heal itself through And that, of course, what that did was it enhanced the value of the assets. Like pharmaceuticals are petroleum based, you know, these things. So, Sloan Kettering, the history of Sloan Kettering Clinic. Can you talk about, perhaps we can talk about cancer on one of these shows, but the industry behind the cancer industry and the standard care for cancer these days, you know, it's.
A little, anecdote. I have a friend of mine, he went to, it's in Houston, it escapes, MD Anderson. It's an oncologic center, very famous, this supposed to be like, and so he had a tragic story. He had C, something like that. One with hepatitis. It wasn't causing him any trouble, but his doctor said, we got a whiz bang technology and they, we can get rid of that, the hepatitis. I think it was Hep B, I'm not sure, but it was one of the hepatitis strands. Wasn't causing him any trouble, but he had it. He had it for years. Says, we can get rid of it. But basically the whiz bang drug has to be inserted into the bone marrow. And he tried the whiz bang stuff and it supposedly did get rid of the hep. But then in a year, he came down with multiple myeloma, which is a cancer of the bone marrow and incredibly rare. So he then went to MD Anderson. And the point of my story is that what he signed when he went in there was basically their legal ability to experiment and to use the data. I mean, that's what it was. There was, I saw the verbiage. There was no mistake in what they were after. They wanted human guinea pigs. And they were saying, we're going to give this whiz bang stuff. We're going to get rid of your cancer for a little bit, maybe, but you got to make sure you don't sue us in case you die or get sick because this is an experiment. And oh, by the way, we're going to, use the data. And they even were going to be able to use like some of his DNA, evidently, if they needed that for some purpose later on. I mean, he was just signing over his whole self and soul to this organization. And I said, he's a good friend. I just blew up and I just really tried to get him to get the hell out of there. I said, this is a death trap and you're nuts. But he decided at the end of the day, he and his wife decided that they would trust the professionals. And he lives part of the time in Houston. So evidently MD Anderson has a big reputation there. So he went in and he got the whiz bang and, blew up his immune system and he went into a coma. He was in a coma for a week and he was in like one of these, because his immune system was gone. It was something to do with his stem cells they were messing around with.
And this stems from the fact that he was like, he had hepatitis, that he was coping with.
Yeah, he started out with hepatitis and he ends up, he's like a bubble boy in this room. And now that, he's recovered pretty much. I mean, he's back, but he never regained his health or vigor. And now it's just this, in my opinion, we're just waiting for the return of the multiple myeloma, because after you've had that much trauma, the idea that you're going to be free of cancer, I mean, it's nonsensical. You've damaged your immune system. It's going to come back and you're going to be worse off than before. But my point is that they are, people who go into this system, the cancer and even the vaccinations. I mean, be careful what you're signing, because they are really trying to start treating us as research laboratory rats, and the paperwork's reflecting it. So, cancer is just another one of the fake narratives, cancer, vaccinations, they're all part of the same thing. It's basically just like a medical 911. They control the media. They control the universities. They can therefore intimidate, and the government, obviously. So they can intimidate us through just telling us this is what reality is and then bullying and shouting down and pillorying anyone who says otherwise. So we have to be clever about how we can create information that will actually then start to break down the intimidation, because that's really what this is. This is, I mean, vaccinations, there's just so much evidence that they're related to autism at this point. The population should be rioting. We just have to make sure that the information gets to the public, and hopefully that'll be a way to break it down. And, you know, Tim, it's no longer like theoretical in our family, because we have, you know, one of the next generation inside our immediate family members is now dealing with autism. Yeah. And incidentally, it's vaccine related, you know.
They should do a study, what's the autism rate among vaccinated populations and autism rate among those populations that are not vaccinated. I think they'd find something very interesting. But that, no, you never see that, yeah, that clear comparison, do you?
No, and that's the thing, is that they aren't even conducting experiments. So that's like, I heard one such experiment, or at least not experiment, but data set that I thought may be promising, was that there was a group that didn't get vaccination with the Amish. Mm-hmm. And I had read that someone had indicated that the Amish had no autism, or a very low rate of the typical baseline historical rate of autism, which is like 1 in 10,000 or something. So if that's the case, and that's a data set that needs to be brought out, there obviously are other countries that don't have vaccinations at the same rate we do. We see, this is the thing we've got to start doing. And if there are people out there that are, you know, if you're demographers, or if you're getting statistical training in colleges, these are the things that we can do to rebel efficiently. We've got to get more data on that to show that, you know, that the science in back of vaccinations is fake. You see, we have to show that the claim that it doesn't cause higher rates of autism is fake. We've got to start showing people that. So particularly people in the research community, or people who are, you know, getting into, you know, levels of university training that would have give them access to, you know, data and techniques that can be used to produce this stuff. Man, for God's sakes, organize yourself and start getting the information out.
Yeah, and not only is the science fake, the history is fake.
Yeah.
You know, the history is fake, and that's clear. And I mean, again, but you have to be willing to crack a book and read about it. It has to be, you know, it has to be promoted, that, you know, propagated, and it isn't. It's suppressed. It's suppressed history. The false history behind these things, and, you know, Jonas Salk, despite his openly open support for depopulation and experimenting on the human race, is still held as a hero. Right, I mean, that's
Plotkin.
He's
a, you know, absolute bona fide psychopath. I mean, his statements are just self-evident, and yet he is the Wikipedia Santa Claus of the vaccination industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're being mind controlled. This is just propaganda that's actually working.
If you ever watch a New Orleans Saints football game, down there in the Superdome, and you'll see a big advertisement there for the Ochsner Clinic. And look up who Ochsner was. If you read Mary's Monkey, you know, the book by Ed Haslam about the polio vaccine, it's how it intersects with the Kennedy assassination and Lee Harvey Oswald. It's a very interesting story. But Alton Ochsner was this doctor who promoted the polio vaccine, who injected his own grandchildren. One was paralyzed, the other one died from it. And this was the Salk vaccine, and that story was suppressed. But but the story there was they found out that it was an attempt to weaponize, you know, create a cancer drug, which some say was created. That's a whole other story. But I'm saying, you've watched the game, you see the Ochsner Clinic, and you think, how many people recognize that name?
You know? Right. Well, it's like Laura Bender. I mean, she was a ghoul that used, you know, chemical lobotomies on children. She experimented on hundreds of them, mm-hmm, and basically wiped out the soul of hundreds of children. And there's still like the Laura Bender award that's given out at these pediatric conferences. You know, I mean, the more ghoulish the person is, the more likely they'll try to, you know, make him into, you know, some kind of hero of the people, like Winston Churchill, mm-hmm, for example, you know. And so, you know, again, we live in a system of mind control. It's evil, and it's very well designed, and it's supported by all kinds of different historical narratives that they can force into us through intimidation and through just control of the basically, you know, the avenues of information. You know, they control the universities. Here's what the curriculum looks like. They control the hospitals. Here's what the medicine is going to be. And so we don't, most of us don't really resist the general, you know, kind of everyday reality of all these things. And it, because they control so many things, when you start going through the list of things that are all interrelated and part of our, you know, mind control state, you look very much to someone who's being introduced to the subject as nuts, because you go, yeah, Holocaust doesn't look like it's real. Yeah, Hitler, he just comes out of, you know, British Freemasonry. Yeah, vaccinations are just a way to, like, you know, basically dumb us down.
Oh, Joe, yeah. I suppose you probably also think we didn't land on the moon. Oh,
yeah, we didn't land. See, there it is. So, so you just get one after another. The whole thing is fake, and that's not something that is, you know, digestible.
Well, my response to that is one lie at a time.
Exactly. That's what we have to do. We just have to break them down one lie at a time. Yeah. You can't give them the whole lump. But what I like about, like, I mean, what I think if there's an opportunity in the vaccination situation is because the data of non-effectiveness of the vaccines is so clear. And now if we can get to couple with that, as good a data sets indicating that the damage that the vaccine causes is real and, you know, observable and stuff, then maybe we'll have one of the, you know, Tim, what are we trying to do? We're just trying to look at little points of leverage.
Well, it's very, you know, it's kind of like, you know, that, you know, the vaccine court, and you have this fund that Ronald Reagan created in the 1980s. Where the pharmaceutical companies are completely immune from liability for their product, at the same time the taxpayers or the people who pay for vaccines that many are forced to take, or at least believe, a lot of people just told, they're not really forced. So it's kind of like they believe they're forced. They're really not. If they knew their rights, many of them could avoid it. And believe me, if you just didn't have, even California, they could pass all the laws they wanted. People didn't comply with it. They couldn't enforce it. So it is a big mind control game. But if you do go to the vaccine court and they do find that your child or you were damaged by vaccines, what they do is they'll say, well, it didn't cause autism. It's not autism. It caused encephalitis.
Right.
The brain swelling, which causes the autism.
You may be autistic, but you get paid out for something else. And then the paperwork said, because they don't want the autistic word, you know, hitting back in public mind. And of course, the absurdity of, you know, they go, well, look, vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. They're so unsafe that, you know, the vaccine industry has to be uniquely excluded from, you know, lawsuit because they're simply so unsafe. And yet when they try to get people to take the vaccines, they go, look, they're totally safe.
Yeah. The doctor will say that, yeah.
If they're totally safe, then let's bring the vaccine industry back into the, you know, the lawsuit system. Or if they're so unsafe that they cannot be, then parents need to, you know, be given a choice, particularly, you know, when you have like elementary kids with 65, 66 different vaccines they got to have in order to comply and get accepted into the school. You know, so... I think it's an opportunity. Well, I think that, malevolence is too obvious here.
I think the obstacle here is the solution to this problem would require a fundamental reordering of our postmodern society. It means that babies need to be breastfed. I mean, that means that women new mothers can't have regular jobs. Their job has to be being mothers and being with their kid. It means they have to be preparing healthy meals. And to put the time, and quite frankly, only women are going to do this, mothers. And this is what they used to do. The children were healthier for. They didn't need drugs. It requires, again, reevaluating so much of what we, of the modern world, and so much has invested in it that people aren't willing to do that. And so we're stuck being
great. Tim, that's a fabulous point. That's a great point. Is that so? The solution is just a complete, it's obvious, right? Because once the vaccine paradigm collapses, everything else is shaken.
Well, they say, if you don't get vaccines, you can't attend public school. Okay, then let's get rid of the public schools.
Right, exactly. And if
why
you're
do we have public schools?
Yeah, if you're lying to us about this, we'll just, kind of move down all of the different things that enslave us and look at all of them. Mm-hmm. So this is, there's opportunities with all of the schematic that we bring out, with all the different little elements of.
One point that I find is interesting is how institutions are used to create vectors, or at least opportunities to experiment with people. One thing is they've turned public schools into this. They've turned certain professions like the medical profession into this, nurses and doctors and even, children who attend public schools. For the longest time, the military was reserved for this. And it seems to have branched out from the military, where a lot of these soldiers become laboratory rats. This goes back to World War I, but really we saw it with the Manhattan Project, the downwinders, the soldiers that were there. But even the World War II, when there's how many people suffered paralysis and sickness from being from the inoculations they were receiving. A lot of that is covered up. But I'm just saying, my point is, a lot of these institutions that either we're told we have to participate in, then become a pretext or excuse to make us submit, to getting injections.
Well, just a little point of hope, interest, perhaps. My uncle actually was a downwinder. He was a sailor. He was there for atomic blast, right, close by in a boat. And he saw the blast, told me about it, and then after that had a skin rash that had never appeared before and then plagued him the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. So, the idea of human experimentation on the part of the oligarchs, man, it's en masse. I think this is maybe a little more speculative, but I actually think that the Spanish flu was basically kind of weaponized medical science. I mean, if you look at the initial outbreaks, they all occurred on U.S. military bases. And people say, well, it's because the soldiers were coming back from World War I and they just happened to bring the Spanish flu with them, But then if you look a little closer, you can see that actually they were doing vaccine experiments. Right. Particularly the soldiers at Fort Riley. Have you ever followed that?
Mm-hmm.
They had all of these Rockefeller Institute vaccine experiments going on, the story is kind of technical, so probably shouldn't get into it. But basically, it sure looks suspicious, when you look at this. And so I think it was just a population reducing experiment.
The question is again, it's not a question of would they do it, it's a question of could they do it, right? I mean, because we have a history of them doing it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, they're the ones that they lace tetanus with that GmbH hormone that causes women to miscarry, a contraceptive tetanus shot. And I think it was in Mexico or Latin America and in Kenya. And they were caught, the World Health Organization was caught doing that with the World Bank.
Yeah.
And they still try to deny it. But why were they only giving tetanus shots to women between ages of 16 and 45?
And see, this shows my point is true or correct, is that the experimental vaccines and serums that they're supposedly experimenting with and trying to find cures, this is just a complete nonsensical cover story. They really are experimenting to see what damage they can do. They want to have science that will enable them to create a Delta class and an Epsilon class, and also to reduce population, and of course, and to sterilize, right? So these are all of are the goals of the medical industry.
People have a hard time accepting that such malevolence can exist, but then they admit it. And like I said, I cited Jonas Salk's book. Gates talks about it in TED Talks about reproductive health reducing the population.
Look,
through vaccines.
Anyone, yeah, I mean, anyone who wants to see the truth of Tim's point, just Google Dr. Stanley Plotkin human experiments. Experimenting on handicaps, orphans, children. The YouTube video, it hasn't been taken down yet, as far as I know. Look at that.
Yeah.
And then you'll see that Tim is exactly right. That, you know, there is just such a cold-blooded, malevolent soul in back of the medical industry.
And what makes you think, just you think they won't do it to you?
Yeah, gosh.
You don't think they'll look at you as colonial subjects, as Africans?
Yes, they exactly right. And this is right. We are human in form, but not in social potential. Because, you see, when he says social potential, you know what he's talking about. He's talking about, you know, the social group and order and structure that he's part of. And that's not us, folks. We are not in, we don't, unless you know and hang out with Stanley Plotkin, you are not in the social potential he's talking about. You're in the experimental group. Right. So,
who is it? Is it diet, injections, and injections?
Yeah. Shaw's quote. Yeah, that it's absolutely right. That's what we're up against. And so we should, I hope I can, for what it's worth, just make a request of anyone involved in, you know, statistical medicine to start to think about how to get data, you know, to show the malevolence, to show the complete lack of efficiency or any kind of beneficial aspect to the vaccines, and to show that the damage, show these things clearly, find ways to get this information out. This is really, my opinion, you know, after watching Plotkin, man, I really had a sense of urgency, because, you know, they could be closing in on just a complete end of human informed but not social potential humans. That's you and me, Tim.
Yeah.
And the people listening, that's who he's talking about. So we need to act here quickly. And so if you have the capacity to do so, then I would encourage doing it immediately. So, well, Tim,
okay, yep.
I just wanted to thank you. And, again, say I was sorry for missing last week, but I was part of a vaccine experiment. And took me a while to bounce back, but you know, the only side effect was the lower half of my body turned into a seahorse.
So, yeah, well, that's good.
Other than that, I'm good. All right, brother. Okay. Thank you so much.
Enjoy the holiday. We'll talk next week.
Yeah, have a good holiday. Talk next week.
Bye-bye.